call this meeting to order. We have roll call.
Bill Goggins?
Here.
Laura Hine?
Here.
John Kapler?
Here.
Kathleen McMonagle? Betsy Pringle?
Here.
Elsie Weber?
Here.
Rick Whitney?
Here. Okay. Next item we have is the reading and approval of the minutes.
Are there any minutes?
I dispensed with the reading of the minutes, or I,
were there any other questions?
What do I say? I moved to dispense with the minutes.
Yeah, I think, as I recall, isn't this from the previous meeting?
We didn't have any minutes.
Did we have?
They mailed us some in separate cover.
That was it.
I didn't get it.
Did everybody get it? If you didn't, then we can, if we haven't, let's not be approving them if you haven't had a chance to read them.
Because, they came in a separate cover.
I would entertain a motion to defer this to the next meeting.
So moved.
Okay. Seconded.
Second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, so we'll take up the minutes of the next meeting. Be sure to bring them to the next meeting, you guys.
I'm going to have to get a copy.
Yeah. Okay.
Are they on the website? Are the minutes on the city's web? Oh, not until they're published, probably.
I think they would be, but I'm not sure.
Maybe then, let's just, for the next meeting, just have those minutes included in our packet. Make it easy. Okay. The agenda for tonight, doesn't look like we've got any audience to be speaking to us. We have the Shoreline Master Program from 6 till 7, at which time we will break for a joint hearing with a hearing examiner. And then, if we haven't finished our deliberation on the Shoreline Master Program, we'll take that back up after the hearing. And that's it. So with that, we have no audience. Let's move on with the Shoreline Master Program. Teresa?
I think Teresa's here to make a short presentation.
Okay.
Good evening. The idea this evening would be do your final deliberation and make a recommendation to the council. We'll just do a real brief presentation, any follow-up issues that you have, and then any kind of additional questions. Some of the three remaining issues at the last meeting had to do with minimum dimension of the riparian area. A couple of members suggested that maybe we should have some minimum standards so that people don't end up coming up with a one-foot-wide, very long planting area. And we consulted with the watershed company. They were particularly concerned that there's no standard about how much the ratio of shrub to ground cover, because they said you don't want a situation where someone just puts in all ground cover, so that it's just not, really not provide what we're looking for in terms of ecological function. So they're recommending 60% shrub, and then the remaining could be ground cover. Staff was considering and was recommending 3 foot wide, because that's generally when you have shrubs, that's probably about as minimal. Once they start, become full growth, that seems to be a reasonable and a minimal number. So that's what staff is recommending, is 3 feet, and then to also add 60% shrub, 40% ground cover. And again, the shrubs can be low. They don't need to be tall shrubs, but they just will add a lot more diversity than just allowing someone to put in all ground cover. Second one was a couple of members suggested looking into flexibility for landscape requirements for waterfront parks. The areas at beach and the boating areas do not have to have the standard 75% of the shoreline area with the 10-foot wide landscape strip. So again, that's a requirement, 75%, 10 feet wide. But it excludes the areas where you have boating and you have beach access for swimming. But there are areas along our waterfront park where it's just trails going along the shoreline. And so there was some discussion about looking at flexibility. So you have been provided some language in the section on landscaping that just says that the Parks Department can propose alternative. They just have to provide the landscaping somewhere within the 200 feet of the shoreline to give them, more flexibility. And that's in page 103 of your packet. And then lastly, there's been a couple questions on the 3-year time frame, which is required in the guidelines. So when you're looking at a new bulkhead, we're not going to have very many of those because almost our entire shoreline is bulkheaded. But the few incidents where someone may want to put in a new one, 3 years at the time frame, and Houghton was questioning some members, why isn't it 4, 5, or 6? We provided you with an email that we just received, because we've been asking Department of Ecology, and it sounds like it was part of, I don't know if you know, that the guidelines were part of negotiated work between the state, development community, and the general public. So it appears that the 3 years was negotiated, and also there's some explanation there as to why they're looking at the time frame of 3 years. And we do have to provide that 3 years. We cannot extend it out 5 or 6 years, because then we would not be consistent with the guidelines, and it would be a reason for the Department of Ecology to not approve our Shoreline Master Program. The Planning Commission, August 27th, so this was after your last meeting, they did like the idea of the new approach on tree replacement, which the Houghton Community Council at the last meeting did agree to. The only area they were concerned is they felt we were going from 3-1 to go 1-1. They felt that was quite a change, and so they would like to see 40 square feet for the trees that are 12 inches and smaller. So again, a reminder, the way it was written is 12 inches of grading, they need to have 80 square feet of riparian. The Planning Commission would like to see at least a little bit of vegetation, because 12 inches, that's a tree that's about 20-year-old tree. So it's, you know, those are fairly significant trees. So they're going to recommend a council to the city council to add, require 40 square feet with the trees that are slightly smaller, and then go with the 80 square feet, which you had agreed to at your last meeting. So that's something for you to think about if you agree with the 40 square feet. So again, that wouldn't be too large. It would be 8 by 5 feet. It wouldn't be a large area. And they also like the idea of the minimum dimension. They thought that was a good idea from the community council. So they had asked staff to go ahead and come up with a dimension. And in a minute, I'll go over their final recommendation at their last meeting. And they also agreed with Houghton Community Council on changing the timelines for submittal. They agreed on the 24 months. If you recall, the initial staff recommendation was 18 months. That's if you have a fire, how long it takes to give you opportunity to submit your building permit. They agreed with the community council to give people 2 years from the time you have a fire to make your building permit submittal. And they also agreed on if you have an emergency repair, emergency work, the original document said 1 day, and now it's 2 working days. And they agreed with your recommendation on changing that. So September 10th, the Planning Commission met. And again, they did come up with the recommendation to, yes, go ahead with the riparian area and the minimum shrubs. So they like the 60% shrubs and the 3-foot-wide area. Landscaping requirements on park, they end up saying no to that. They felt that the city should meet the same standards as the rest of the city. And in fact, if you look at our restoration plan, we really rely heavily on improving the shoreline on the parks. If you go out to the parks, there are a lot of them that just have a sidewalk right next to the edge of the bulkhead, and it's just lawn. So they feel that the Parks Department should come in and start providing that landscaping. And in fact, they are in some areas already starting to do that, but they felt that homeowners are going to be looking to the city to meet the same standard. So they didn't feel that it should be changed.
But aren't the parks for people to be in? And if
what's that?
Well, I guess I'm thinking that the parks are for people to sit down in the grass and have lunch and play with their children. And
right.
Isn't that taking some parkland away?
So what it would be is they'll need to have a 10-foot, so you'd have the edges of the shoreline, you'd have a 10-foot wide landscape strip, again, going to be low shrubs, and then you'd have the lawn behind it. So the idea is just instead of having the sidewalks, a sitting area right next to the edge, you just move it back 10 feet. And then you have, again, this will be over time as they do a master plan or if they install a new building. So we're not going to see this, you know, quickly, but it's just as they, it just means that people would be not right up at the edge, but they would be, all the parks have areas where you can go down to the beach. They're just talking about those lawn areas. Instead of just having the lawn right up to the edge, they should have a 10-foot wide landscape strip like single-family homeowners will have to do, and multifamily and commercial.
So, Teresa, if I could ask a question on that, one of the signature photographs for the city of Kirkland is a view from the beginning of the dock area at the downtown beach along the scalloped concrete mm-hmm. steps right. to the pagoda on the end. That's got lawn right to the top of those concrete steps that come down. So should that pagoda outbuilding be modified in some sort of way would that trigger then a landscaping buffer of shrubs and ground cover 10 feet wide at the top of that concrete bulkhead all the way around so the lawn doesn't spill down into the beach?
If there's access to the beach, if there's stairs, then you would not need to have the riparian vegetation. It's only where you would, let's say, just have a walkway following along the shore, or if there's just grass right up to the edge, they would need to pull the grass back.
But looking at the, like, the photograph up here, is that the one you're talking about,
yeah,
John?
Yeah, thank you.
So it sounds like you're saying that where there's that 10 feet of grass following along the curve of the steps there that everyone sits on, we wouldn't be able to access that area anymore?
No, because that is an area where you have access down to the beach,
right.
Correct? This is
that
an area where there...
Okay, so mm-hmm. All right.
You see that? So where it says access down, so that'd be like a swimming area, because that's where people walk into the swimming area. It's where there is no steps and access into it.
But
you do have some of that.
So mm-hmm. Farther out there by the...
further, I think, west.
The point?
There's no stairs. There are a lot of rocks. Rocks there. Then that's where the city would need to
put in like
some landscaping.
But there's benches out there, and people go and sit on the bench. That would be moved towards the...
I think it's going to be a judgment call in
right.
These cases. Whether it's, if it's accessible and usable, then we wouldn't require that. But if it's just there, then we probably would look at alternatives for the planting to...
But how would planting... I mean, this has got this rocky beach.
Right.
How is this riparian planting going to help any?
Rocky beach. I'm not, you'd be talking about
the
riprap along there?
Riprap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Again, I think we have to look at that on a case-by-case basis. If it makes sense, we probably want to use that. If it doesn't and it's used for access, we want to make sure people still have access to the water. That's the important part. And that's, I think, it's
absolutely
reflected in the regulations.
Mm-hmm. I'm a teeny bit concerned about case-by-case basis. One of the things we wanted to try and do in this document was make it predictable
I think what we're saying is where there is public access, right. They don't have to have right. The landscaping.
Right.
It's just where... lawn goes up and it stops. And the purpose, again, for the riparian is then you end up having bugs that go into the vegetation area, which then serves the fish, wildlife. So you just want to get the vegetation as close to the shoreline as you can, except, again, any areas where there's public access for beach swimming or boating or all that, they do not have to provide it.
So if there's a walk, like you said, a sidewalk next to the bulkhead,
right, like at Dave Brink Park, that's a good example where you just have the sidewalk and you can't climb down. I mean, most people
can't.
No,
but you're walking right there. So you're saying that sidewalk would be removed.
Would need to be moved back 10 feet.
And then the sidewalk, so you can't really walk along the water anymore.
Right. Well, it'll just be 10 feet back. And actually, the provision allows for you to go all the way down to 5 feet. So it also allows you to vary that. So
right.
You could have it down to 5 feet and, like, on the sides, make it wider. So remember, the provision is from 5 to 10 feet so they can meander it.
But
so, again, it's the balance between providing that vegetation right next to the shoreline.
Teresa, if you move the side back 10 feet, so much for the people that want a picnic with the shrubs on the other side of the sidewalk between it and the water. What happens to those people that like to walk along there and skip a little rock?
They can go down to the beach, like at Dave Rank Park. There's access to the beach. You would just go down to the beach. This area, like we're talking about, is all elevated. Most of the areas we're talking about, Waverly has another section. They're next to bulkheads, and they're elevated. So people want to go down the beach, they'll go down the stairs where there won't be any vegetation to get right directly to the water. So this is more the area you're kind of further back where it's elevated.
You're talking about areas where people are already separated from the water by a bulkhead.
Correct.
And you're just saying that we're going to soften that bulkhead edge with some vegetation, which will be attractive and natural.
Some of us go all the way to the edge of the bulkhead and stand on it.
So what we're saying is that those places where you want to get to the edge, you go to the places where there's access
correct.
To the water.
Right.
And
it's just, how does the city justify that we wouldn't do it versus we're requiring other property owners who also want to have access to the lake are not having the lawn area right up to the edge?
Well, at Houghton Beach, because I do this frequently, I like to go to clear down The heck with the swimming area. I want to just walk along and look at the water and enjoy it. Do a lot of thinking. Yeah. And there's rocks there, right?
Mm-hmm.
There really is no real path. The lawn just kind of comes right on up to the rocky area. And you're saying that we should put a row of shrubs in there?
They need to pull it back and put in some ground cover and some they can put low shrubs in. It says that we don't want lawn anymore right up to the edge. And if we're requiring it of homeowners, we also, the city needs to meet that standard as well.
We don't have to do it. You're saying that in theory, we should hold ourselves to the same standards, but you got different uses. A single family use of property is not nearly as intense as a parks use. You've got a huge population of people that have this very small amount of shoreline that is accessible to them versus the single family where you've got one family that has this piece of property accessible to them. You know, my experience being on the parks board, I don't think we need to hold ourselves to the exact same standard because you got totally different uses.
Well, I think you're taking a whole bunch of land out of the public use area. All of a sudden you have a whole lot less square footage for people to be sitting around or walking around or picnicking or anything, right?
That's my big concern, you guys, is that we have only so much waterfront. We're not going to get any more for public use, but the population is going to grow and grow in our region, so the demands on that limited amount of waterfront is only going to increase, and we're reducing our supply of available use of the waterfront, in effect, by imposing these standards on us. I think it's admirable for us to try to hold ourselves to the same standards, but you really have different uses, and I don't think we need to do that.
Who's saying that we should hold ourselves to the same standard?
The Planning Commission, and we'll have to see what Department of Ecology says, because our restoration plan shows the city and the cumulative impact. We reviewed our parks and determined that we'd be adding a lot more landscaping, so our cumulative impact was based on the city providing the same landscaping in those areas where it's not direct access. So it wouldn't be the entire parks, it would be just in those sections. So our cumulative impact analysis said the city would do this, and the analysis showing that we would meet no net loss was based on the city providing the same standard. Same with our restoration plan.
So I mean, my weighing in on this is I think it's a good idea that the city holds itself to the same standard as the public in the city. However, the difference in use is the major issue from my standpoint. I'm looking at page 98 of 137, page 106 in the packet, but it's 98 of 137 where it says public access. This is where the verbiage is that you're talking about. And what I, from my standpoint, if we want to create a little bit more landscaping along the water's edge to drop bugs in the water to help the fish, that sort of thing, if conceptually we can agree on that, what I'm reading in the code is that it is a blanketed swath across the public parkland waterfront as opposed to pocketed areas where we're going to intensively landscape and then other pocketed areas where we're going to allow visual access and physical access and not have that buffer. So from my standpoint, I guess I don't have quite the negative reaction as long as we can say in these specific areas at the park, we're going to landscape, in these specific areas, we're going to make it open so there's
correct
a visual.
So, right, so there and, will be
and
no
that's
park.
That's what's not in here.
Right, there's no park that has that's going to be continuous because they all have public access. They all have swimming areas or boating areas. So it's just going to be sections of each park where there is no access. So that's where the 10 foot, you know, 10 could be down to 5 feet would be located. So it isn't every park's having the swath.
So that's the word sections and the word case by case kind of come up that, okay, now I'm back nervous again that it should be a little bit more predictable than that.
Well, it will be wherever you don't have public access. And also there's a provision under the public access is the public access can go through the riparian vegetation area. So you can have it meandering back and forth. So the idea is just to make sure we have some vegetation next to the shoreline. So if you go under the public access, it does allow the trails to go into the riparian area.
So would this Because there's a lot, right now there's a lot of, I mean, we've purposely put in these sidewalks right along the waterway, you know, the
public access, right?
Public access, mm-hmm. Yeah, sidewalks. So would this only be triggered if there's, like say David Brink Park, this would only be triggered if you took down the bulkhead and you created a soft shoreline,
It would be if they expanded a building more than 10%, or if they came in and did like a major master plan. But just doing the bulkhead, when they do the bulkhead, they would most likely go ahead and put vegetation, because I think the idea is to take out that bulkhead and put in soft shore.
They started to do that at Brink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
actually, a lot of areas, as we replace the bulkheads where we have no vegetation, we're going to start seeing more soft shore that will have the vegetation. So actually, we're probably not going to have lots of areas where it's just going to be bulkhead with vegetation, because it's one of the things in the restoration plan is to remove those bulkheads.
Then
we'll have vegetation in the shoreline stabilization area.
Yeah, because bulkhead with the vegetation doesn't seem like it makes a whole lot of sense.
Right, correct.
Teresa, has there been any thought given to, I'm thinking of Houghton Beach,
mm-hmm.
where all the rocks are, and there's a bit of grass and shrubs and stuff already growing there. Can't they make their improvements on the other side of the rocks and the water, just like these people that have to rebuild?
Yes, correct. They can do that, and they're also going to have a lot of the vegetation amongst the rocks.
Right.
They could also have some of the riparian area within the rocks. You know, you can plant.
But could they sort of plan to use the water side and so people can still get all the way down to the water,
mm-hmm. right.
without having to go to the beach and fight with all the little kids that are out there when you don't want to, you know?
Yeah, if I may weigh in here, I think you've all got good points, and it's really trying to balance a number of different characteristics here between function and accessibility and people using the parks. And Rick, you're right. I mean, these are very overused, parks in some cases. So my guess would be for those parks that have a lot of intensity, we're going to provide more access to the water. Those have less intensity, say the south end of Waverly Beach Park, maybe some opportunity to do something there. I think everybody wants to make sure we have access to the water and be able to use the water. And I appreciate trying to have predictability, but this really is a case-by-case basis, depending on the site, the park, the usability, the function, all sorts of things. And where opportunities exist to provide some ecological improvements, we can do that. Where it's pretty clear that we want access to the water and people to use the water, I think that's the intent as well. So they're actually somewhat competing public interest here.
It's my understanding from reading this that the Parks Department really did not want this. They wanted to have the option of being able to put the vegetation wherever they wanted. Why has it switched around to this?
Because they also have to recognize that we need to meet the ecology mandate, which is to start getting vegetation next to the shoreline. So it's also getting the Parks Department to start shifting the thinking. It's getting everyone to start shifting the thinking.
So generally, what's the percentage of shoreline that the parks have compared to private or commercial properties?
It would be in the inventory. I don't know the
number. Yeah,
numbers.
I don't either.
Is it 40%? It's very significant how much
significant.
We have that's yeah. public park.
Not, it's very but that's that, including
right,
all the...
Right, Juanita Bay and Yarra Bay.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the ones where the public's using them, the Houghton right. Beach Parks, the...
Yeah, so I don't
parks,
know that number.
That's a small, small number. And that's where it's going to have the biggest impact. If we start imposing that kind of restriction on those heavily used parks, that's what I'm concerned about. And I'm also concerned that we're laying the groundwork for... You know, if somebody wanted to try to push the city, whether it's Sierra Club or somebody, and say, you've got to do this because you've got it in your, city's ordinances, that we wouldn't have that flexibility.
Well, I mean, you've heard the commission. You're free to make whichever comments or recommendation you think works. And we tried to work out something with the Parks Department we thought was acceptable to them and us, and they felt comfortable with it. The Planning Commission wanted to be a little stronger, so and you guys can weigh in and make your points.
So help me understand. I'm just remembering when we did the water tour and looking along the shoreline, however many years ago that seems to have been. It did appear to be that a good percentage of the bulkhead construction was actually in city park areas. And I remember having some conversation with people on that tour saying, gee, if the city's going to be moving towards something that's going to replace the bulkheads, the city is one of the primary ones responsible for that. And what I'm hearing is that you're saying this is not something that, as soon as these regulations are put in place, all the bulkheads have to be removed and this has to go into place. It's a matter of, again, phasing in when new construction or a replacement is happening, then that change will be occurring as it needs to be over time under certain circumstances. Right. So this is not like all of a sudden it's a blanket imposition of 100% change just outright.
Because it has to be either with a master plan or increasing a building like 10%. So maybe if they're doing like right now the Juanita Beach master plan, that would be an example of one. But we don't do very many of those, and they're rare.
So we'll have an opportunity over the next few years to see what happens with one or two places that start doing something like this. And then, as all regulations do, we'll be back here in a few years looking at this again and making another change and have opportunities in comprehensive plans and all those others to make some decisions.
Right, about we can amend specifics the SMP
and applications.
If we have one master plan and we don't like the way it comes out.
Laura, you're totally correct in saying that this is probably not something that's going to have any immediate impact and it'll be phasing over time. But my concern is that when it will become an issue is when we're doing a renovation of our parks. Mm-hmm. And that renovation probably would be in response to the use of the parks has increased so much and or the parks have gotten, worn down enough that we feel a need, or the bulkheads themselves are failing, whatever. But there's enough... I think it's going to be more likely that we're going to have demand for the use of the parks in excess of the available waterfront, the capacity, and that's at that very time when we need to try to increase our capacity or increase our utility, we would, if we wanted to do something to try to renovate the parks to increase its usability to the public, we would be forced by this ordinance to actually reduce it.
And I guess I'm not seeing how it's going to actually reduce it, because the enjoyment and the pleasure of the park as people's love affair with the lawn maybe is starting to change. It may change the way that people want their parks to look and want to enjoy their parks in the future anyway. So I guess I'm seeing opportunities for people to weigh in along the line and say, yes, here we want some shrubs, here we don't. They'll have that opportunity. And again, I don't see it as being a severe imposition. And we've had the same discussion about what is happening with people's individual property. And if this is going to be impacting people's individual property, I think we need to all take another look at how our entire waterfront looks and is used and fits in with the environment. So it's like you said, we have to find a way to become in compliance with the Department of Ecology because of new information that we have and the way that things have changed over time. Then I think we need to be open to it.
Well, let me ask you, let's say David Brink Park again, if that bulkhead is taken out, then you do a soft shore. And will that then pull, because you can't put fill down.
You can.
You can.
You can put some fill down. Mm-hmm. So we wouldn't lose any park space if the bulkhead came down, would we?
If it's done properly, right.
If it's done properly, it would continue to go out. It wouldn't come back. It wouldn't go back. But would people, let's say if you put like some boulders and, but could you put a little beach in there?
Sure. I mean, that's part of the public access. That's why I would think if you designate it as public access or water dependent or you're using that, then you have what we have now with people being able to get to the water, and that's allowed. So it's not required they have to put in the vegetation if it's part of public access. If they don't have public access, then maybe you're looking at a different scenario. But we want people to get to the water, to use the water, enjoy the water, and that would be then exempt from this requirement.
There's nothing in this ordinance in terms of percentages or square footages.
Of what?
Of what?
Of other than the 10-foot distance that could be reduced to 5 feet. That's the only dimensional?
It's 75% of the shoreline. It's under 75%, so that's under...
Okay, did I miss that, Teresa? I'm sorry.
That's under the vegetation requirement, under... Right. I'll have to get the section.
Okay.
Page 95 of 137.
Okay, so Rick, how does that weigh in then?
Yeah, so is that, like, if you've already got your beach that's established,
mm-hmm.
and then you've got your bulkhead that's going to come out and you're going to create this new scape, softscape, then the new area where the bulkhead came out, 75% of that area has to be planted?
Right, but they may end up putting the vegetation in the soft shoreline measure. They can
but
integrate that into it.
It's not 75% of the whole
no,
park.
No, it's just the section.
75% mm-hmm. of the reclaimed area.
Mm-hmm. Or the city could decide just to have more open areas with stairs. And so if they widen the area with stairs and have more distance to access into the beach, then you don't have to put vegetation there.
Right.
Okay. I think that's just what we care about. I think we just want to make sure that that's important. Aren't losing access to the shorefront, because not everybody wants to be on the beach with all the people. Some of us like to be off on the little bulkhead or whatever, you know, spending some time alone.
So if you read that at the top of page 95 of 137 and you look at that, does that help satisfy some of your concern, Rick? I'm
concerned about the future. I just don't want to put us in a situation where we've adopted something that 10, 15, 20 years from now we're going to regret, that it limits our ability to make maximum utilization of the waterfront because we have to save the fish. I'm sorry, but you know, there's a point at which, you know, we've got, if at that time we got 100,000 people in the city of Kirkland that are making, not to mention that people outside our city that are making use of our waterfront parks, I don't want to say, well, I'm sorry, but everybody's going to get crowded into this little area that, you know, is allowed because the rest of it's got to be reserved for fish. I'm sorry. Just don't see it.
Well, and as I'm understanding, it's not just for the fish. It's for the habitat that supports the fish, which essentially is a habitat that is a healthy lake. And we all want a healthy lake if we're going to be swimming in it or looking at it. Or fishing in it, which is, I think, a very large, substantial percentage of the American population.
Teresa, when you're talking about, you're not talking about like taking all along the front except for the beach area?
Any area where there's not, where you don't have access into the water.
Anywhere that you don't have access. So what happens when you go down, you know, I'm going back to Houghton Beach again, and I got my blanket and I got my radio and I got a book that I want to read and I want to lay down on my blanket and prop myself up like this and look at the water. You won't be able to do that through the bushes.
Except that Houghton, for example, is on a slope. So, well, again, they can have ground cover low area, and then they can have shrubs more on the side.
So they're not going to just make a straight strip along all unused areas that don't go to the water that you're not taking your kids swimming and stuff in.
Right, and they can also make it 5 feet down the center, and then they can make it wider on the sides to make up. They just have to have the total square footage, and it's only 75%, but again, they can. So we only want it 5 feet where everybody wants to sit around on the lawn, and we'll make it wider on the sides. As long as the total square footage is met, they can lay it out in a variety of ways.
Has there been any discussion as to how tall these little shrubs could get like this?
They'll probably want to be sure they put in stuff that stays low, because there's a variety of things they can choose from.
I guess, when has this been in the plan the whole time?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It was worded a little differently, but it's been in your business.
So this has been here the whole time, and we just now figured it out.
We raised the question at the last meeting.
Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And at that time, because I was saying, is there an unintended consequence of this? And that, and so they were going to look into it, and that apparently was the first time that the Parks Department was even, you know, addressing it. Is that?
Well, we had talked to them several months ago.
Had you?
Right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, things were still evolving and language was being changed. So mm-hmm. that was a good question to bring up. You know, no question.
And the only
public hearing that's been on this was ours, and that's, is that the only one that's going to be on it?
We also had the Planning Commission has held their hearings.
They had a public hearing, and nobody brought that up at the Planning Commission. I think this was so worried, nobody thought.
I think that we should be looking at this on a holistic basis, as though the city of Kirkland's waterfront is one, it's owned by one entity, the city of Kirkland, and all of their waterfront property is considered in these requirements, because that would be fair. You know, each of these parcels is, you know, you've got individual property owners. Why should the city have to have each single parcel subject to this when our total waterfront, we contribute more to the quality of this entire Lake Washington system than anybody else by far? And to impose these restrictions on the few parks that we have that are heavily used by the public, when we're contributing in a major way in the other area, in the Juanita Bay and the Yarrow Bay, this is insane. I'm sorry. I think that these restrictions should be looked at for all the property of the city, not parcel by parcel. Because if you look at it that way, we are clearly doing more than the other property owners, and we're not asking something of the public that we're not doing ourselves.
The problem is the restoration plan was relying on the city meeting the standards. So in other words, we're moving forward, not looking at what the past we have. We have to improve the quality of the lake. No. And so you can't go back on. And secondly, the cumulative impact analysis took into account the city vegetating the shoreline, and that's to help offset overall the additional piers we're going to be getting, additional development. So the restoration plan took into account the improvements that the city would be making to its parks.
So let me probe your comment a little bit. Are you saying there should be no vegetation requirement along the shoreline?
What I'm saying, Paul, is that when it comes to imposing these standards, mm-hmm. on city property, we should be looking at all of the property on a comprehensive basis that the city owns, all waterfront property.
Well, maybe we put a criteria or something to that effect in here as well, suggest it's an additional, you know, factor to consider when we're addressing this. Because did the Planning Commission, did they change what was in Houghton's packet?
No, well, it's just what happened is we brought forth this new language.
Right.
Which you also looked at, and they felt no.
Okay.
That, because the way you read it, it gives the parks offering total flexibility, mm-hmm. so they don't have to have any vegetation next to shoreline. They could have it all right back at 190 feet. It does not require, it just says flexibility and allow, you know, and public access. So they probably literally wouldn't have to put any vegetation next to the shoreline.
And maybe that's not a bad thing. Maybe that's in the long-term best interest of the city.
Well, we're trying to balance having to improve the ecology of the lake versus public access. And it's a delicate balance, but you need to be able to provide both. And I think the position of the Planning Commission is you could still have public access. You're just having a 5 to 10 foot wide landscape, you know, vegetation area between.
And yeah, but when you're looking at the parks that have the heavy beach usage, like Houghton Beach and David E. Brink and Marina Park, mm-hmm. and the other maybe two or three, those are just a drop in the ocean compared to all the other shoreline that the city owns that has all this soft effects already, or maybe you can make improvements to. These are just tiny parcels that we're just saying, hey, leave them alone because we want to have people to be able to access the beach the way they have been. Don't force having to add all this vegetation and take away the footprint of the park from the amount of people that can use it again.
Except I don't think you can add vegetation to the wetland areas because those are... I just don't know if that's even possible in the areas on the north and the south, because again, the restoration and cumulative impact looked at the areas in the city that are hard shore in our existing parks, saying those need to be improved. And again, we start from 2006 moving forward, not looking at what we already have. So if we do not require some vegetation, we will not be meeting the restoration plan and potentially would not be able to meet the cumulative impact analysis.
So then what is the impact to the restoration plan if we don't do this for the small number of parks that have beach access, such as the ones I mentioned, David E. Brink, Houghton,
right. if you look at the restoration plans, those are where the, that is where the list of projects are. Dave Brink is one with removing the bulkhead. So if you look at the restoration plan, it's those city parks are the ones that we're looking at adding vegetation as one of the components for restoration.
I think that probably we would feel better if we could see what was going on. I'm not asking you to do that, but I guess we need to just trust that the city wants people to use its parks and to access the water, and that they will create a soft shoreline that will allow people to still go down and walk on the rocks, and they will put vegetation in that in that developed, that newly developed area, and that will be part of the 10 feet or part of the 75%.
Mm-hmm. That can be part of it. That's correct.
That can be part of the 75%. Mm-hmm. And
I think I think that would be the intent, to try to make it work for everybody's benefit, and to design something that accomplishes both of that, provides an ecological function, provides access as appropriate, and maximizes the way people use the water. I think we're all for that.
And reading the entire language at the top of page 95 of 137, I mean, it does say that if it can be demonstrated that the vegetation in the near shore is not feasible given public access, existing conditions, or maintaining public views, and that it can be provided elsewhere in the park. So there's some contingencies built in, even in this language, that if this is a place where people are, you know, habitually pulling right up to the edge of the boulders, and that's where they want their access, or you can't see the water if they put the shrubs in, I'm guessing that will be accommodated and will be covered by that inclusion.
Well, it actually even goes on in my mind beyond that, because the paragraph preceding what you were chatting about specifically says does not contain swimming, beach, boating area, or other similar water activities, water-dependent activities. And if I look at the definition of water-dependent activity, it is so broad that if it's next to the water, it's a water-dependent activity. So essentially the 75% goes out the window. I mean, it's exactly how I read it.
Unless it... And as long as it doesn't interfere with those water
But activities. Water-dependent activity, if you look on page 13 of 137, water dependency is it's so broad that if it's next to the water, it's a water-dependent use.
So I think if this verbiage on 95 of 137 is what is going to be included, then...
Well, let me clarify. The Planning Commission did not like the language where it says views. It's the new text that's underlined. Let me go to you then.
Underline.
The Planning Commission is recommending not keeping the language that says to allow them flexibility based on public access, views.
Oh, then they want to pull that out.
They want to pull that out.
That's
they
what
want
we're arguing about. Yeah, that's
right. Because the problem, if you look at it, then the city...
This is something the staff created with the Parks Department and felt comfortable bringing this forward. The Planning Commission didn't agree.
And
well, page I have a question. So what page do we find the crossed out part?
Here. I had it on here.
I have a question too, Teresa, while you're looking.
103 of the packet?
Right.
Yeah, it was on the PowerPoint.
According to the Parks Department, they wanted to have put in there, and if the vegetation area and... if the vegetation area is provided elsewhere in the park, in other words, if they decided not to put it along the water, they could put the shrubs over here somewhere?
They could put it as far back as 200 feet. But the purpose of the riparian vegetation is to have it right next to the shore.
Right.
So again, the Planning Commission is not recommending that on page 103, for public parks, required native vegetation area of 75 may be modified for the remaining portions of the near shore. They do not agree with that language. Because they feel it is,
and
it does
document,
not require the city to have vegetation right next to the
shore.
So
on your document, it's crossed out?
The text we have, let me make sure, it's 103, and it's...
Yeah, there's nothing crossed out in our package.
No, it's not crossed out. We're showing you the language that we provided to you. The meeting was done after this was sent to you. So the language you see that's underlined, they are not agreeing with.
But there's nothing underlined.
There's nothing underlined either.
There's nothing underlined.
Okay, do you have page 103 and it has formatted indent left and then it has for public parks is at the top?
Mm-hmm. Huh? Uh-huh. Well, the very top of page 103, which is 95 and 137, is B, all other uses.
Right, correct.
And then right below that, it's for public parks.
Underlined.
There's nothing
underlined.
No.
It's not underlined.
Nothing underlined.
It's just plain text.
Oh.
Unless it's in the attachment that we got in the email, which I didn't get.
Okay, so that language in there for public parks, one and two, all that is underlined under ours. I don't know what yours, and that's what the planning commission would like to remove.
Oh, we don't agree with that.
We don't agree with that.
That's new language.
The whole B?
No, have B. We'll read what has always read, all other uses, the applicant shall plant native vegetation as necessary in at least 75% of the near shore riparian area located along the water's edge.
And they take out everything else.
But everything else below that is new as of the last time you looked at it. Was added.
That they don't want it.
They do not want it. Right. Because the problem is, if you read it, they can put the vegetation at 190 feet back from the shoreline edge.
So, Rick.
But you still, as John was indicating, you go above that, and it talks about water dependent.
Okay. I think there's, rather than beat this thing to death, I think there's a consensus, unless I'm wrong, on this issue that we would not agree with that.
Right. Would you want to see this language stay?
Okay, so
as it is, I'm concerned about this language, but if you don't have that language, there's no way. I think we're tying our hands. I'm not opposed to having the city voluntarily take those steps. I think that's fine if they're doing that, but to legislate it and tie our hands so that we have no flexibility in the future to do those things, I think that's really a mistake.
Yeah, 75% of the nearshore water's edge is huge.
But keep in mind that what's not included there is your beach area, your beach access area, because you go right above it. Let's see, it's under water. You write up above it 1A, water dependent uses and activities.
Yeah, but
and what it says there is anything swimming beaches, other similar activities. They only have to plant it wherever there's no wherever only if the public access is not.
Yeah, but
being
swimming
used
swimming beaches. See, other similar activities, I think that gives you, that's a little too fuzzy for me because it's very specific about gas stations and haul out areas and boat repair, but then it gets a little fuzzy when it says
similar activities
to swimming beaches.
We're looking at a platform area where people can sit out and then walk down to the shore,
I guess
something like that. We wanted to keep it somewhat, again, flexible. Trying to envision what in the future the city could be doing to the parks.
The best way to keep it flexible is to, at a minimum, retain this language.
Well, Teresa, this is really confusing. A few minutes ago you said that if they took out the bulkhead, that all they'd have to do is 75% of the area that they just took out do, right?
No. Well, actually, if they pull out a bulkhead, they do not have to put in vegetation. Okay. The bulkhead, again, the riparian vegetation is triggered if they do a major master plan or if they add 10%, if they add a new building,
well,
something like that.
Underneath B here, it says all other uses, the applicant shall plant native vegetation as necessary in at least 75% of the nearshore riparian area located along the water's edge. Well, that sounds like the whole park.
But again, it's not the sections that have the boating and the, so this would be the remaining section. So those would be the water dependent uses are the swimming and boating areas.
But I guess some of us are trying to just say that you have activities, but then sometimes you just want to sit.
Sit by the water's edge.
Sit by the water's edge, and you're not. It's not an activity. You're not swimming. You're not boating. You're not filling your gas tank. You know, you're not doing anything active, but you want to enjoy the peace and quiet of the park and be near the water. And this sounds like it's putting a buffer between you and the water.
That's right. So if you disagree with the Planning Commission, then I would suggest you make that comment and recommendation. And
we disagree with the Planning Commission. So. I disagree with
it. No, I think there's enough.
Should I move forward and just finish up?
Yep.
Okay. So we did have comments from the tribe, and we've gone in and made some edits. A lot of their comments were asking for enhancement beyond no net loss. They're asking for additional requirements than what the guidelines require. So there we did not respond to those comments, but other ones were just simply wordsmithing of some words, some very simple changes, and we went ahead and made those changes. And the Kirkland Lakeshore Association, we were waiting for their last comments. Basically, what they did is they just reiterated the comments from their major submittal a couple weeks ago. And again, they're still concerned about setbacks, rebuilding non-conforming structures, requiring needs assessment for replacement bulkheads. Again, if you have a new bulkhead, you have to have the geotech, but if you're going to replace it, you just have to show that there is a need for it. Unless the house is 10 feet from the shoreline or closer, then you don't need to do that. They would actually like to see a cap on mitigation costs. We've gone into the regulations and had a lot of reference to that costs can be considered. They can come back with an alternative that is less expensive, but the association would like to have an actual like dollar amount cost, which is very difficult to try to come up with a dollar amount in terms of mitigation, and also at what point then do they actually not mitigate so they don't meet no net loss. And then also they would like not to have to replace fallen trees within the shoreline setback, which at this point they would have to do. So again, these were just reiterated from the comments that they had earlier. So nothing new.
Teresa, I have a question. If a property owner buys a property down along Lake Washington and it's an illegal non-conforming and they didn't know it when they bought it, are we going to tell them they have to rip it down?
Again, if they want to just repair, maintain, interior remodel, they can keep it. It's when they want to tear down the entire structure and rebuild.
Even if it's an illegal before they bought it?
If it's illegal, that puts it in a different category.
Yeah, that's
we're not going to make them tear it down. Yeah.
Right. They can still keep it even if it's illegal.
Most of them are legal nonconforming. We have very few cases of illegal nonconforming.
Well, that would really be a rude surprise for somebody, wouldn't it?
I mean, if they built it, if we found through a complaint basis, for example, that they built something without permits in nonconformance, then yeah, we could make them abate that. I haven't seen many of that in a number of years at Kirkland.
It just crossed my mind, and I just was thinking how bad I would feel if I bought property down there and found out that somebody had done a bunch of illegal things to it, and then when I wanted to remodel it or something, I'd be told I had to bring it in total conformity.
Okay, there's more to discuss on this, but it is 7 o'clock, so do we need to?
No, I think if you're ready to, and then here are the next steps. So maybe you decide if you want to go ahead and take final action, and maybe it sounds like me do a poll on that one question about landscaping to see if you want to make a recommendation to council, but maybe that's one issue that you want to say, no, we would like to stay with this proposed text that was in your packet.
So we could make it just propose that city council really look at this issue. I mean, they're going to look at everything.
Or in your transmittal, you can say we agree with the planning commission except on one area, and that this is one area that we'd like this language in here for parks. And then we would provide that with the language, and then the council could look at the language and decide what route they want to go. And then it will end up coming back to you once the council is ready to do an intent to adopt. And then we would then transmit something then onto ecology once you've done your review. So,
I'd like to add something, too. Go ahead.
I've held off on this, but on page 3, when we were talking about the 3-year time frame for erosion assessment, you specifically state in your memo, in addition, this only applies to properties with no bulkheads and
right.
For those who want to enlarge an existing bulkhead. Staff has estimated there are only 6 or 7 properties in the shoreline area that have no existing bulkhead. Doesn't this also apply if somebody is looking to replace an existing bulkhead?
No.
No.
They only have to do a needs assessment.
And so what's the basis for the needs assessment?
Just showing that they need, that there is erosion, but it's not using a 3-year benchmark.
Right.
They just have to show that that there is erosion that will occur over time, but there's not a time period that it has to be attached to.
Because that's really important to me. Can you show me where it specifically provides that?
Go to the shoreline stabilization, which is, let's see here. The very beginning of shoreline stabilization. Again, we are following the guidelines, so we don't have, we have to reflect the guidelines. So it's not something we can or cannot put in there. So let me give you the section.
Page 75 of 137 talks about new or enlarged structural shoreline.
Right. Page 83 of the packet overall. B1.
No, I understand new. That.
Okay.
New or enlarged.
Okay, so let's go to repair, replacement. All right, let's see here. Go to page 85. Five submittal requirements for major repair or replacement. Written narrative that provides a demonstration of needs shall be provided. A qualified professional, but there's no time limit on it. And one is the assessment. Here is assess erosion potential resulting from action of waste. But again, you see there's no timeline.
And I think there's only one, maybe two properties in Houghton that don't have a bulkhead, my guess.
Yeah, I just, my main concern is down the line.
You've been consistent on that, right?
Well,
No, I understand.
If they had to, in order to replace their bulkhead, they had to prove that they were in imminent danger of having their primary structure eroded within 3 years. I mean, good Lord, that's just not a reasonable provision. So that's...
You're saying the state says it has to be that?
For new bulkheads. And what is it showing that there, that over time, over a three-year period, there's having erosion? It doesn't mean you're going to lose your house immediately, but it shows that erosion over a three-year period, it's significant, or it's likely going to happen. But that's in the state guidelines for new bulkheads only.
But this says for major repairs or replacements.
That's for needs assessment, not the geotech.
Oh.
And there's no three-year time frame in that
section.
So if somebody wants to replace an existing bulkhead, they still have to do an assessment of the necessity for the hard structural stabilization?
Unless their house is, we're proposing that if the house is 10 feet or closer, they don't have to. We'll have to see if the state accepts that. That's not in the guidelines. But yes, the state says that they need to do a needs assessment if they want to replace a hard structural. Now, they show that they need it. They don't have enough distance and area and wave action. They look at the depth. It's a variety of things that would be in that needs assessment. Then they can replace it.
So there could be a case where somebody has an existing bulkhead, but because their house is greater than 10 feet from the shoreline and that they can't come up with an assessment that shows that they need it, that they could be told you can't replace it, you've got to come up with soft.
You have to do soft shore. Again, they would have to be able to, they would have to show you, it would have to be a situation where you could have soft shore too. You'd have to have the distance, the fetch. Yeah. So not only is it showing you need it, but also that it's feasible to have a soft shoreline. So it's kind of looking at both. Both you need it, but you're also looking at is soft shoreline feasible. And so, we've provided that tree diagram. And if you look at it, there's a list of issues that they will be considering. How far back the primary structure is, depth, wave action. But again, this is state guidelines. So the city doesn't have, this is where they're very specific in the guidelines.
You know what? What if they said that you just have to turn your property over to the state because they want it? I mean, that's about where this is going for people who own waterfront property, that they can't protect it against erosion.
Well, they can't protect it. I mean, soft shore lines do work to protect it. So that's.
Yeah, what if it costs them a fortune because they've got to put a bunch of fill in?
They cost about the same. It's been our experience. So.
Okay, I'm Teresa. I'm reading the replacement or major repair of hard structural shoreline stabilization on page 77, or 77 of 137, page 85. And so you can only, it can only be allowed, or the city will only approve it if the primary structure is within 10 feet of the ordinary high water mark, or the primary structure, there's conclusive evidence provided to the city that the primary structure or use is in danger from shoreline erosion caused by waves.
Mm-hmm. That's reflecting the state guidelines.
In danger when? In the next year, 50 years, 100 years?
There's no timeline for this, so if they could show with wave action and the type of soils they have, that
this
so potentially...
But,
Well, I think, I mean, is you concerned that the people won't be able to protect their property? That's not our intent here or the state's intent. They can protect property if they do the right job with the right materials with a softer approach.
Well, it's so incremental. And it's easy for us to say, well, try it, you know, but what if it's, you know, we say, well, it in theory, this should work. But it's their money. They're the ones that are being forced to risk. There's no consideration for costs here. And if what they're and if the city says no, you're going to have to, you should be able to make this work with a soft shoreline. And then the soft shoreline isn't working. City isn't happy. They don't have to foot the bill.
If it's designed properly, it should work. I mean, we've had examples of that working, and it's all over the country, actually. So,
didn't we see some of the early letters that stated that people had installed soft measures, and then they had a bunch of fill, and it ended up getting washed away?
Well, that was Mr. Style, I think you might have been referring to, and we don't know how that was installed or what the technique was used in that case. And
he actually has a bulkhead, and fisheries required him to put some gravel out front of that. But when I went down with Eric Shields, the director, it looked like they just sort of had dumped gravel out there. And Watershed, it says you need to do different sizes. It has to be done correctly. And so there may be a question whether it was just placed out there, but not. His looked like they were all the same size, and you need to have kind of different sizes. So his was just a hard bulkhead that Corps required him to put in, and fishery.
At the end of it all, as you pointed out in our last meeting, Paul, it is really the city's determination on if they agree with the professional reports. That's even stated in the code at the top of page 74, 137, item number 1C. It very clearly says that if the city determines that it is not feasible based on the information provided by the applicant. So it sounds to me that if you go through all the expense to have the reports done, the city still has to agree with it. Again, you pointed that out right on our last meeting. So,
but in most cases, I mean, if it shows a need, I think the city would err on allowing them to do it and not, because the city doesn't want to be liable if they have problems. So I think most cases the city would probably go with the judgment of the professionals.
This criteria, though, it doesn't say that there can't be erosion. It simply says the primary structure has to be in danger from
erosion.
Right,
that's out of the
state. So say the primary structure is located 30, 40 feet from the ordinary high water mark.
And that's what the state guidelines say. We have to follow the state guidelines.
And so say that you can reasonably predict that over the course of 50 years, you're going to lose 20 feet of your waterfront.
Well, beach lines are dynamic processes, and there's no guarantee in life about rivers and lakes
and
streams.
That's exactly what I would expect. And that's where, if I was a property owner on the waterfront, I would be scared to death of this kind of, because that's exactly the way I would be.
But there are ways to address that through proper environmental design and installation that could protect those property. So
this doesn't provide for protecting the retaining the existing setback.
That's correct.
It doesn't provide for that. All it says is right. Protecting the primary structure from danger.
Right. And that's what the guidelines say.
I'm sorry, I just can't accept that. I may be out of line, but if I got to put myself in the shoes of somebody who owned a property on the waterfront, I think that's terribly unreasonable to impose that on them. I still have the exact same concerns that I've had all along.
Especially since we've purposefully taken out any cost language. I mean,
yeah, the city's not going to be liable. They could say, well, you could have, you know, every year spent $5,000 restoring the soft shoreline. There's nothing here to prevent that. I think it's really unreasonable. So
this is, you're saying that this is not our doing, that the state is requiring this.
And they'll be looking to see that we have this in our SMP.
Right, the state has final authority to approve or disapprove the SMP.
Mm-hmm. Does this mean there's going to be a fire sale on waterfront property?
I don't think so.
We could get some nice property cheap. There.
A lot of them have bulkheads already. They're going to be okay. And if so something happens, they've got a recourse to pursue. If it looks as if erosion is, the patterns are changing, they have a path that they can follow to protect their primary structure.
By suing the city of Kirkland and the state of Washington.
By following, getting the assessment and doing what it says in the guidelines.
The assessment doesn't provide any, it doesn't give objective criteria. It doesn't specify the number of years, the amount of erosion that is reasonable, that's acceptable. It doesn't address any of that. It's totally subjective.
It just says a report by a qualified person, and the city has to agree with it, essentially what it says.
So it's now 7:15. Do you want to? What's your pleasure?
Yeah, I think we need to take a start the hearing, don't we? I presume there's people out there waiting to. So we'll just take a recess, but we'll be coming back to this. We're not going
to. Okay, so you want me to continue to another meeting?
No, I think we'll come back right after the hearing. I don't expect this hearing to take a great deal of time, do we?
I don't think there's a lot of people here.
So. No, I don't. I've been looking. I've been watching the window out there, and I'm not seeing any faces. So
the one other after the hearing, then the hearing examiner leaves, and you meet again, and we prepare your report.
Right.
And then you could get back to this after that.
Right.
Do we have another meeting in September? Do we have a meeting in
September? No more meetings.
We have another meeting in September.
The 28th.
Mm-hmm. So can we continue to there?
Let's
look at the timeline here for.
Yeah, I think
this goes to City Council the 22nd. So if we don't finish this tonight, we have to make some kind of effort to get our recommendations to them.
Right. I think we've identified the areas of concern, and
I have one more.
Oh, well, okay, but
that it'll be real short,
quick,
and to the point.
Go ahead.
I see no problem with removing the north property setback, but there is one area that I would like to see the City Council do a little studying on, and that would be the rare exception where one building set of condos would be built on the south side and leave a 5-foot to the property line, and one on the north would build and leave a 5-foot to the property line, and that would make 10 feet between two large buildings. It's 12 feet for a minimum alleyway in the residential area of Kirkland. And personally, I'd rather see the two buildings go like this than to leave a little tiny strip in the middle like that. It'll be like a tunnel. Nothing's going to grow in there.
Yeah.
In 10 feet. It's 10 feet from my garage to my property line on the one side. The other thing is, I would like them to consider. I see no reason why it can't be changed, but I'd like to see something put in. Either make it 10 feet on each side, if that were to happen, or maybe they can come up with something better. But I don't think a tunnel effect would look good between two large buildings on the waterfront. That's all I got to say.
Okay. So I would like to keep the option open that we'll try to deliberate this and come up with a recommendation after the public hearing and our recommendation on the public hearing. We'll just see. It's only 7:15, and if this hearing doesn't take a long time and if there's nothing real controversial, we should be able to get to it. And that's what I'd like to see happen while it's still fresh in our minds, instead of if we come back in 2 weeks, it'll be, So let's try that.
Yeah, I just need a motion to continue the hearing till next available time after the public hearing.
I'd like to move that we postpone this hearing.
Continue this.
To continue. This to the next available time.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, good.
When does our hearing start?
Now we have to give the recording secretary about 5 minutes in between.
Motion for a 5-minute recess.
We get 5 minutes?
Go ahead and take a 5-minute recess.